We're doing the book of Daniel. We're up to what's called the second chapter, the 19th Pasuk. Nebuchadnezzar had a dream. It bothered him a lot. He couldn't remember the dream. Called in the wise men and told them, tell me my dream and its interpretation. They got him upset. They said, tell us the dream, we'll tell you the interpretation. He got annoyed at them, ordered to have all the wise men of Babylon executed. At which point, Daniel, when he and his friends are summoned for execution, they ask for a license to be granted a little bit more time. And Daniel sets his friends to pray. And we're up to Pasuk Yud Tet.
So he killed all the smart people. That's always a good thing.
Edayin. Then. Throughout the book of Daniel, we will see Edayin, Beidayin. It means then. Daniel, then the vision, the secret was revealed to Daniel in a vision of the night. So Daniel blessed the God of heaven. Daniel called out and said, Levei shemei dielaha mevarach min alma ve'ad alma yehei shemei rabba mevarach min al me'olam lo me'omaya. This is one of the sources. This is one place it says it. May the name of the potent God be blessed from this world to the world to come. Levei shemei dielaha mevarach min alma ve'ad alma. Di chokhmeta ugvuta dilehi, that wisdom and might are his. Vehu, and he, mashnei danaya vazimnaya, he changes times, he changes periods. Madei malchin, umhakeim malchin, he removes kings, he establishes kings. Yaiv chokhmeta lechakimin, he gives wisdom to the wise. Umandea liyadei vina, he gives intellect to those that are intelligent. He gives understanding to those who have understanding. Hu galeya mikata umesatrata. He reveals what's in the depths, what's hidden. Yada ma vachashocha. He knows what's lurking in the dark. Unhora imei shirei. And light rests with him. Unhora imei shirei. Light rests with him. So this part of Daniel switches to Aramaic and stays that way till a later prophecy will switch back.
Right. How similar is this Aramaic to the Aramaic of the Gemara?
Similar. Very similar.
At least it has the same letter.
Does Aramaic have any significance? No, I mean, it has significance, but
its significance is that it seems to be the language of Avram Avinu.
He spoke Aramaic?
Avram came from Aram Naharaim. Aramaic Aram. Okay, so we were taken back to our roots when we were exiled to Babylon.
Yes, but I mean, a lot of Torah is in Aramaic.
Really? What in Torah is in Aramaic?
I mean, there's the Gemara.
Ah, so the Babylonian Talmud was written in the language of their time. Their
like
language
parts
was
of Daniel, parts of like Mishnah, Pirkei Avot.
Very little. Hillel, who came from Babylon, said al datfei chatfuch v'sof mitayfei chitufun. One Mishnah in Aramaic. There's very little. Most of the Mishnah is in Hebrew. Shanu chachamim b'lshon Mishnah. The Mishnah in the end of Avos says the language of Mishnah was the Rabbi's Hebrew. A different Hebrew than the Tanakh's Hebrew.
Because
of the language. Very nice. I never thought of that. It's a good point. Very nice.
So it was just a discrepancy in language.
I didn't understand.
As in, like, the Arizal has a lot of words in Aramaic too.
I don't know. I know nothing about the Arizal. Don't know. Okay. I do not know why the book was actually written in Aramaic. Meaning the commentaries all say they started talking Aramaic, so that's what's being quoted here. But the rest, much of the book is going to be in Aramaic. I have theories, but until I have a backing by one of the commentaries, I'm not going to say my own theories.
In Egypt, they didn't speak Hebrew, but the conversation was written down in Hebrew.
Right.
They did speak Hebrew.
Pharaoh wasn't talking Hebrew.
No.
But the Torah quotes it in Hebrew.
But what about Moshe, Pharaoh's daughter? Because the etymology of Moshe...
Where is she ever quoted with regards to who is this child? Okay, right. That was probably said in Egyptian, and the Torah quotes it in Hebrew.
The Zohar was also written in Aramaic.
Really?
Okay. From what I've heard, I
haven't
actually read it.
I don't know.
Could it be that this is going on a wild limb? Could it be that Hebrew is like when you have text that comes from Hebrew, it's more from at the divine level directly down to teach us something, and when it's Aramaic, it's more from a level of us figuring out things that make sense with us as a community as a whole.
But then why would Ecclesiastes be in Hebrew? I'm saying if that's the logic, then Ecclesiastes should also be in Aramaic.
Maybe because Shlomo's wisdom came from Hashem.
And Daniel?
Daniel's in Aramaic, though.
Right. Saying Daniel, it seems also... he's having prophetic revelations now. God's talking to him. I don't think so. Okay, so we have to think about it. We have to look. It's not a question of introspection. It's a question of doing more research and finding an answer. I don't see in the commentaries on the page, I don't see an answer. Lach Ela Avahati, to you the God of my fathers, Meode Shabachana, I give thanks and praise. Di Chochmita Ugvuta Yehavtli, because you gave me wisdom, you gave me might, Uhan Hodatani Divee Naminah, and now you informed me what I've asked of you, like the word in Gemara Ba'i, to need, want, or ask. Dimilat Malka Hodatana, that you let me know what the king wanted. The king's asking me for his dream. You informed me what it was. Okay. So those are Daniel's words of thanks and praise. He's thanking God. What's his next move? Guys, what should he do next? Go to who?
Nebuchadnezzar.
Okay. Next guess? Who should he go to now?
His friends, are you? Who are also smart. I read it.
Okay, so now that he knows the dream, Daniel al Arioch. So Daniel goes to Arioch, the executioner. Dimani Malkal Ovadale Hakimei Bavil, that the king appointed to kill the wise men of Babylon, Azal, Vechin Amarle. He went and told them the following, Lechakimei Vavel al Teoved, stop killing! You see? Here you see the greatness of Daniel. We thought right away, let him go to the king. He says, no, till I get to the king, till they let me in, till I tell him the dream, till he is happy, till he summons Arioch, who knows how many people will die? Why should I let even one person die? First he goes to Arioch and says, stop the killing. I have an answer. I want to tell you a story. Our four-year-old took her little bimba, that's this little car, you know, like a Fisher-Price car, and her aunt or someone was watching her, and she took it up the sliding pond. She said it's much more fun to go zooming down on the bimba than to slide down. Very smart, except it's a little bit dangerous. I just came home from shul, and I see her with her bimba sitting at the top, ready to go full force down. And I say, Tzipora, stop! And she sees me, and with a glint in her eye, says, what? And pushes up. You understand what she did? She ensured that she got what she wanted. Later on, she could say, oh, that's what you said, Dad? Okay? Why am I telling you this? Because it's a good tactic in life. sometimes in life you got to know how to do this. The Talmud says that one of the kings consulted with one of the rabbis when we were under Roman rule, and the rabbi told him, rebuild and fortify the temple. And then send word to the Romans and ask them if it's okay. And then if the Romans say it isn't, say, shucks, I was sure you'd approve. And the Romans were on to his trick. The Romans said sent back, you bad dog, you. They said, if you didn't do it, don't do it. And if you did it, you should know you're a bad dog. That's the way a bad dog behaves. You do it, then you ask. But that's a tactic in life. Sometimes it's better to say, oh, I'm sorry, than to ask and find out you shouldn't have done it. So Daniel says, let me save a few lives. And if the king isn't happy with me, I'll say, oh, I'm sorry, gee shucks. I was sure you wouldn't want to kill people unnecessarily. Now, he really can't be sure with Nebuchadnezzar. But if he's holding the cards, so he can take the risk. And here we see part of the greatness of Daniel. So I'm saying, hey, when your four-year-old does it, it's cute if she walks away safe, unscathed, right? But you have to not use that tactic in life. Sometimes it's better to say, I didn't hear you. Yes?
My question is, would he have the authority to stop killing without getting a direct order from the king? He's just getting an order from Daniel. But...
So Daniel's going to be smart. Hear the next line. Azal.
This is the king said.
Ah, listen, here's what he's going to do. Azal v'chein amar lei. So in order to preclude what you're saying, meaning Arioch's going to say, hey, who told you? So he does it smartly. Stop killing the wise men. He tells the chief executioner, take me into the king to give him the result. So now Arioch has a double interest. He's not too keen on killing all these wise men, and he's going to get some credit in this. Daniel says, I need you to get me into the king. I have the answer for him. So he's covering for Arioch. It's as though he can't enter on his own. Notice the first time he didn't need Arioch to go in. The first time he came to the king and said, hey, what's going on? You need a solution, so give me some time. But now he tells Arioch, get me into the king. I have a solution. So he covers that base too.
Telling his hands too, he can't go on killing people who's taking him to the king.
It seems that way. It seems that way. So Arioch quickly brings Daniel before the king. Notice how Arioch's going to take the credit. This is what he tells the king. I found a Jew that can tell you what you want to know. Takes the full credit. Look what I found. So the king turns to Daniel and beckons him. Notice. Suddenly we're reminded. Daniel, whose name has been converted to Baal Chatzar. The wisdom of this man comes from the pagan god Baal. He's about to ask him, hey, tell me, what was the dream? And the dream is going to tell Nebuchadnezzar, God's upset with you. He doesn't want to hear that from a man named Daniel. God judged me. He'd much rather hear from a man whose name is Baal Chatzar. Your wisdom comes from Baal, my pagan god. Ha'itach kahel, are you able lehoda'utani, to let me know? What dream I saw and what its interpretation is? Anei Daniel. What should Daniel answer? No looking ahead. What should Daniel answer?
Possibly. Let me tell you a story.
We would say, sure. What did Daniel answer? But wait, let's think back in Tanakh. Oh, what did Joseph do when Pharaoh asked him for an interpretation of the dream?
I could ask God.
He says, God knows, with God's help. Daniel's going to do a step more, because Daniel wants to actually protect the other wise men of Babylon. This was an unfair request. If Daniel walks in and says, sure, yeah, I asked God, and yeah, God can tell you. What's he actually saying? All the other wise men, you know, kill them, because they're really worthless. we're going to see that the other wise men do not return in kind to Daniel. On the contrary, they will try to get him killed. But Daniel says to the king, Raza di Malka Sha'el, the secret the king is asking, Lo Hakimin Ashfin, Chatumin Gazrin, Yachlin, Lachavaya le Malka. What you're asking, you won't be able to hear this from wise men. You won't be able to hear it from sorcerers. You won't be able to hear it from naturalists. You won't be able to hear it from soothsayers. No. Biram, but itai ela bishmaya galei razin. Guess what? There's a God in heaven, and He reveals secrets. Vehoda, and He let know lemalka Nebuchadnezzar. He let the king Nebuchadnezzar know ma. What's going to happen in the end of time? What you saw and what you actually were thinking as you were lying down is the following. Here's what's really going on, Nebuchadnezzar. Ant Malka, you the king, Rayonach al Mishkevach Seliku, what you've been thinking about all day really ascended to your mind at night in the form of a dream. Ma tileve achare dina. You were constantly concerned with the question, what's happening next? What happens when you die? That's what you've been thinking about. You built this fantastic kingdom, and you're worried what happens with all this wealth and the Babylonian fame after you die. Vigale razaya. And He who reveals the secrets of the world, Hode'ach, He let you know, Madi Leve, what's actually going to happen. Va'ana, and I, Lo v'chokhma di'itai bim in kol chayaya, I don't know your secret because I'm smarter than all of humanity. Razadina gelili, that's not how this secret was revealed to me. Now, I always wonder how you're supposed to read this pasuk. Let's hear the words again. And it's not because I'm smarter than everyone that I know the secret. Does he mean to say, I am smarter than everyone, but that's not why I know the secret? Because that's what I think he's saying. Seriously.
What is he saying?
He says, it's not that I'm smarter than everyone that that's why I know your secret. But am I smarter than everyone? He says it's not because I'm smarter that I know the secret.
I'm saying
if you find someone smarter, then you won't be able to help you. I know it because of my relationship with
God. Yeah, I don't think he's saying it's not because I'm smarter.
But he's not saying he's not smarter. He's saying it's not because I'm smarter. Should I read it in Hebrew?
Yeah.
Vani lo bechokhma sheyesh bi yoter mikol chai. And I, not because of the wisdom that's in me more than all other living creatures, do I know this secret. It's not so clear to me, at least, that he's saying I'm not smarter than everyone else. To me, it seems like he's saying, even though I'm smarter than everyone else, that's not. But I'm not sure. I always wonder how you're supposed to read this pasuk.
All the living creatures, he uses it in that terminology?
Yeah.
That's like, you know,
not because I'm smarter.
You can be stronger to what you're saying. Then he's saying, you know, but that's not the reason.
I think he's saying it's because, like, I don't know this. I know the answer not because I'm the smartest person in the world.
But am I? And even at the way you said it, I'm not sure what the inference is.
It's a figure of speech. It's like, I'm not the smartest person in the world.
That's exactly the question. That's where I'm uncertain.
What's the word for living creatures?
Kol chayaya in Aramaic. All living things. Kol chayaya.
Does it mean an animal or something?
It would definitely seem that way. So you'll ask me, why does he say even animals? Want to know? That's a long answer.
Yeah, I want to know.
Even more.
Okay. So our answer begins about 40 years ago when Rav Kaduri went to Eilat. So the media went to interview Rav Kaduri after he came back and asked him, why were you in Eilat? So he said, I was there to stop an earthquake. So they said, what do you mean? He said, there's an earthquake that's going to happen and it's going to come towards Israel by Eilat. So I went to pray there so that it stops there. It shouldn't enter Israel. So they laughed at him. And a week later, one of the straits down, going straight down from Eilat, there were earthquakes rattling all the way to Eilat. Now, guys, you could check this. This is like, this is verified. This isn't one of those stories. About 40 years ago,
Rav Kaduri
was interviewed on the radio.
Was he like the chief rabbi in Israel?
No, he was like the chief Kabbalist in Israel. Okay. Go ahead, good. Reuven's doing the search. Rav Kaduri, Eilat earthquake. Very good.
What credibility coming from you? You don't usually quote third board.
No, I spoke. No, I don't believe in any of this. But I'll tell you, I wasn't here. This was before my time. But I heard it from Rav Rom, who was here. He told me he personally listened to the radio and laughed together with everyone else. Like everyone was wondering, what's Rav Kaduri saying? That, you know, yeah, the guy's being interviewed on the radio, and he says, the interviewer asked him, why were you in Eilat? And he said, I had to stop an earthquake. And everyone laughed. Like, okay, he made a joke. Only a week later did they understand that he was right. So then the media put out the following bulletin. They said, earthquakes can be sensed by cats and Rav Kaduri. Because it seems that the way a cat's paw is formed, the way it hits the ground, the cat senses the tremors that precede an earthquake long before the earthquake comes. And so this was like the headline. Cats and Rav Kaduri. You know, they wanted to mock it, even though it was a pretty phenomenal story. So,
did it do anything with earthquake?
Hold on.
I don't know, we're waiting. Mr. Morgenstern is going to give us what the web has to say about it. So I assume it's on there because this was on public radio. It wasn't like...
It's Kaduri, right?
Yeah. Okay. So you see that sometimes creatures can sense something that's coming that humans can't. We know that. We know that there are animals that stampede in Africa. When they know a hurricane's coming, a tornado's, they sense certain danger that's coming long before a human does. So there is wisdom in living creatures that humans don't have. So the simple reading is, I don't have more wisdom than all living creatures because there's wisdom out there that we don't have. Look, a bee can form a perfect octagon within the hive because that's the best way to utilize space. You go take a one-year-old and create an octagon. Bees can do things we can't even dream of. The way they build their hives, etc. And so every creature has their area of wisdom that they were given. It's innate. It's not acquired wisdom. It's innate. But there is wisdom out there. It's not only humans that have wisdom.
Is all wisdom, as in chokma, innate?
No, there's wisdom that's innate. There's wisdom that's acquired. The reason robots are very difficult to create that will be able to manage in space is because part of living creatures, all living creatures, including cells, is that when a living creature bounces against a wall once, twice, three times, he starts using its intellect to get around it. That's the hardship with cancer, that they use chemo, and if they didn't really wipe out the cancer, it's only a matter of time till the cancer cell learns ways around the chemo. Right now we have antibiotics, and slowly the germs are learning how to get around the antibiotics. It's within nature. The smallest ant will bounce against the wall once, twice, three times, and then look for another way. That's part of living creatures. And a computer can do what you programmed it. It's very hard for a computer. You could program 50, 5,000, 5 million ways to get around the problem, but that's what it has. It has what you programmed. Whereas a living creature, the smallest ant, is going to constantly look for new ways. Back to, so that's the simple reading, I think, the regular reading of what Kol Chayaya is. And if you want something deeper, tell me, then we'll go into something deeper. Yeah. You guys want to go on a tangent? You want to go to something deeper?
What?
Yes.
What's the tangent?
What other forms of wisdom there are out there. We got 5 minutes left. We won't cover it. So I invite you to visit our... Okay, I'll say it in real short, but not enough depth. Okay. It won't come out believable if I don't give it enough introduction. It won't. It's not. It'll sound far out. So you have to go listen to their Nachmanides class on Torat Hashem Tmima, or bring this up again Thursday night, and then we can discuss that creature that once existed that had a navel that ran into the ground. Oh, you guys never heard of that, right? An Adnei Asadeh. What?
They got sustenance.
Right. Oh, you heard of it. Very good. You seen one too?
Yeah.
Good. So you'll tell us about it Thursday night. Lahen al divrati fishra le malka yehudun vayonei levevach tinda. So, it's not because I'm smarter than everyone, that's where we went off on a tangent, but in heaven they wanted to give you the interpretation of what's going on, what you've been wondering. In heaven, they have granted you an answer to your concerns. You want to know? They're going to tell you. Ant Malka, you the king. Chazei havaita, chazei, you've seen. Right? In Talmudic Lashon, chazei is also to see. Chazon in Hebrew, right? It's very similar. Chazei havaita, you were seeing in your dream. Va'alu, and behold. Tzileim chad sagi. A huge idol appeared in your dream. Tzalma dikein rav. That idol had a huge basis, a huge foundation, because the idol was towering. It was so tall, in order to remain erect, that idol had a very broad foundation. Vizi ve'yatir ka'em le'kavalach. And this idol had a countenance, it had an appearance that was, here it was standing opposite you, and looking at it, it was awe-inspiring. It was fearful. This idol you looked at, feeling like a little imp as you stared at this huge idol in front of you, you saw its head was made of fine gold. Any of you visit the Statue of Liberty?
Yeah.
Did you ever see, you remember standing at the bottom, looking at the crown, and you see these little people walking around the crown, right? And you stand next to it, and you feel like so small, right? Suddenly you start feeling little.
Is the Statue of Liberty considered an idol?
I don't think so.
Or a statue? A statue forbidden to make by Judaism.
Hi, Benny. We're learning Daniel, and that's an excellent question for Thursday night. So he's standing opposite it. Imagine you're standing by the Statue of Liberty. You know, you have to walk really far back to start seeing the statue. You come up close, it's like you see the skirt coming down, and you barely can see what you're looking at. You gotta take. Got to walk far back, and then you see the statue, and you're still too close. That's the truth. Even when you walk back, like 30 feet, you're still really too close. You got to crane your neck, and you have a hard time getting the full thing in your view. So you're looking at this idol, and you see the head is made of fine gold. Its chest, its arms were made of silver. Its thighs, its legs were made of copper. Its feet were made of metal. Ragloi, and the bottom of his feet, the bottom of the feet you saw were made of a mixture of metal and earthenware. Those two don't really mix, but those were the feet. Right? Chazei havait. Then suddenly you saw that. We will continue, God willing, next time.